Hey there, it's Marcia Meyer, your host with this week's edition of our podcast, Girl Talk, Women, Aging, and Sexuality. Our guest today is Kathleen A. Berry, PhD, my co-editor of the anthology Unmasked, Women Write About Sex and Intimacy After 50. Kathleen and I decided to put this collection of poems and essays together after realizing that women of a certain age are virtually invisible in our culture, and we face unique challenges, especially when re-entering the dating world after a long absence. Kathleen is a psychotherapist in California who specializes in helping women through major life transitions, something she had to confront herself when her husband of 22 years died suddenly 6 years ago. We're going to talk today a little bit more about how Unmasked came about and share some of our online and offline dating experiences. Her website is whispersofwisdom.com. We'll be right back with Kathleen.
Hello, Kathleen, and welcome to Girl Talk. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
You and I did this wonderful book called Unmasked, Women Write About Sex and Intimacy After 50. And we did it because we, as friends and as colleagues, started online dating about the same time. You were recently a widow, and I was not so long before had gotten out of a very long marriage. And so we naturally started talking about our experiences with online dating. And the more we talked, the more we realized that we had similar experiences, and also had talked with other women of our age. We're both in our 60s, and started to realize that, you know, there were some, we were kind of invisible in a lot of ways, right? We, as women, we, you know, thought that we were still sexy and attractive and fun and interesting, and all we found online were really a bunch of duds in a lot of ways. Yeah. Some men, you know, yes, but mostly no. So then we started talking about our, you know, what we should, because you both of us are writers, we said, God, we should put together a collection of essays around this issue. And that's how this book came to be. And you contributed a piece to the book under the pseudonym of Lola Fonte about your first date online. And so I would love you to read a piece of that. So this is called My First Date at 61. So go ahead and read.
My first date was with D.H., who was an intriguing 62-year-old man with whom I felt an instant rapport when we spoke by phone. He was articulate, bright, and a great conversationalist. We shared many interests. We decided to set up a date to meet at a restaurant a few days later. Immediately upon hanging up, I scoured the web and gratefully learned that the narrative he offered during our phone conversation matched what I found from the various online sources I checked. I told many friends about my pending first date and they cheered me on. I also set up a safety precaution system with one of my good friends. I would text her from the restaurant bathroom if I was uncomfortable. I also promised that I would text her when I returned home from the date. As I got ready, I felt the giddy excitement of a 20-something. I carefully applied my new makeup, dressed myself in an outfit that conveyed class and yet was sexy. It was also a black outfit, more slimmy, you know. I am voluptuous and athletic. Code online dating sites said I'm not thin, but not grossly overweight. When I decided I was ready to go, I spritzed myself with my favorite Chanel perfume, took one last look in the mirror, and walked out the door, feeling peculiar, unfamiliar with the experience, missing my husband, and yet determined to start the journey of 1,000 miles, which starts with a single step, right? When I arrived at the restaurant, a bottle of white wine awaited me at the hostess desk. I thought it was DH who was surprising me before I even arrived at the table. Wow, what a guy, I thought. I proudly carried the bottle as I followed the hostess to the table where DH was waiting for me. When I saw him, I was pleased. I liked his face and smile. His clothes were neat, clean, and I liked the colors he chose. I was relieved that he looked normal. I asked about the wine and he clarified that it was not his doing. I was mildly disappointed and embarrassed that I thought he did such a wonderful thing like this, something my late husband would have done. I searched for a card and found one attached to the side. It was from my trainer, who had left the bottle for me as a congrats. The card stated, "You go, girl. Have fun. Drink up. We will work off the calories tomorrow." Dinner went smoothly. He was funny and delightful. He finished what I didn't eat from my dinner, and that felt remarkably comforting and pleasant. We learned from our discussions that we had friends in common. The evening went by quickly, and I did not want it to end. Despite the experts, as well as my close friends who tell newbies to not invite anyone back to your place, I decided that I would extend an invitation since we did have mutual friends in common. Before we left the comforts of the restaurant booth we had shared for over 3 hours, I was emphatic in letting him know that I lived in a gated community with a guard, and that I would tell the guard that he would be allowed to follow me in. I think he got the message that he could not assault me in my home. We walked to our cars, and I liked how it felt to have the strong arm of a man encircling me once again. He made it past the guard, we parked our cars, and walked hand in hand up to my oceanfront condo. He was dumbfounded by where I lived, and I could sense he was a bit impressed. We sat on the couch, and he put his arm around me, and we kissed. I was aware of feeling numb from the neck down. I had not kissed anyone in 3 years. Our kissing moved to the preliminary stages that would be expected to people who found one another attractive. French kissing, necking, petting, nothing more. Until I became aware the DH was unzipping his pants. I stopped him and said things were not going that far, and he laughed. He proceeded to pull out his penis and masturbate in front of me. I was stunned and intrigued at the same time. I had not been prepared for that, thinking he presumed we would move right into intercourse. With my head on his shoulder and my eyes surveying the goods that he had to offer, and I was pleased by what I saw, and in somewhat of a betwixt and between state of mind, I watched him finish the job in a remarkably short period of time. Coming back to real time and remembering where I was, I saw that DH had come all over himself and did not have a cloth handkerchief in his pocket. But why would he? Men have not carried cloth handkerchiefs in 50 plus years. I bolted to the kitchen and gathered several pieces of tissue from the holder on the counter. I handed them to him, and he cleaned the thick white liquid off himself and placed the goods back in his pants. You might wonder what two people in this situation might talk about in the not so afterglow of the moment. I found out there is nothing to talk about after a man I have known for approximately 3.5 hours masturbates in front of me in my living room with my three cats sitting on a nearby ottoman watching us. I was not angry with him. I was more shocked and dumbfounded by his actions and my inaction.
And if you want to read the rest of the story, you can pick up a copy of the book. Kathleen, what an amazing and disturbing experience.
It was at that time.
Yeah, yeah. And since this was your first kind of dating experience, how did that make you feel? Did you feel like you wanted to continue, or how, you know?
Well, I think what it made me feel cheap, actually. The sad thing is how that affected me as a woman, that boys can do what they want and girls are still supposed to be virtuous. That message that I learned so many years ago is still playing in my head. So I had to work through it and realize I learned from it. I haven't done that again, more or less, to invite someone back to my place without knowing them. But I think in this situation, had I even known him a few more times and he came over, I just think this is part of who he was, and I think he would have done it again.
Yeah.
So it was a learning experience for me, for sure.
So now this is several years later. And I think I could probably call you a veteran of online dating. Yeah. Since you've done quite a bit of it. What have you learned through the last few years of dating? And what is it that you were hoping you would find?
I had a naive assumption that it would be very easy to meet someone again. Only because I had never been in the situation of losing a soulmate after being together for 23 years and being widowed so suddenly. It has not been as easy as I thought to get close to someone or to let someone get close to me. I think at this stage of life, men and women, regardless of what kind of relation, heterosexual, bi-curious, bisexual, we're all at a different stage of life. And we're all wondering just how much influence we want someone else to have in our day-to-day living. So as you know, I've relocated from Southern California and I'm now living in Arizona. And I'm hopeful to meet the right kind of man with whom I can cultivate a mature, sensible, loving, fun relationship. But it has not been an easy journey, really.
Yeah. And the online dating world is a whole other kind of universe.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, and as you know, I'm again in a long-term relationship, but I met this man at a concert in my hometown, and it seems like it's a little. I did some online dating as well, and there was one man that I dated for about 7 months who I also did not meet online. But the idea of trying to find someone after a long period of time, whether you were in a long relationship before or you've been single for a long time, I think it's hard, as you kind of alluded to earlier, that it's very hard to create a life with someone when you have already created a life for yourself.
Yes. And that's what happens in becoming a widow. Or a single woman after a long-term marriage, is the growth and development that one must go through as a woman on her own. It has to take precedence over being part of a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have to create the relationship with ourselves first and then go out and see if there's a like-minded individual with whom we can share that kind of, what the Europeans call alone together, where mm-hmm. you're actually in a committed relationship, but you maintain your own primary residence. You don't live together, but you spend time at one another's places. You might create a financial situation where you each contribute to the travels and the expenses of the relationship. But there's no mixing of assets or homes as a permanent situation. And that is ultimately what I'd like to have. And if he lived right around the street, that would be even better.
Yeah, and in fact, one of the women who wrote for the book writes about the fact that she has a relationship with a man. They live two blocks away from each other, and they have a very happy, very amicable relationship. It's interesting that you mentioned that that's more common in Europe, because I think in our country, in the United States, there's this kind of fantasy that, like we have when we're young women, right? That Prince Charming is gonna come and swoop us off our feet and take care of us the rest of our lives. And I think subsequently we think that women need to be attached to a man and have some kind of relationship with a man to have a fulfilling life. And I think that the message for younger women is that's not necessarily true. And I love what you just said about, you know, we really have to be in relationship with ourselves first before we can become available to someone else. But also the stage of life that you and I are at, that women who are over 50 are at, which is that third stage, right? That stage of wisdom, of you know, the wizened crone stage, where and you know this better than I do, but in Jungian theory, it's where you become you know, you individualize yourself, you become the person you're meant to be.
Yes.
And that's where I think a lot of women are at, who are looking for relationship but also struggling with that whole idea of becoming who we are, right? And so how does that, how do you think that, talk a little bit about that stage of life for women and how that can be not only really amazing and fulfilling in how we can develop our own passions and loves, but how it can also be difficult in terms of trying to find a relationship that's fulfilling at a later stage in life too.
Well, that's a very good question, because as I'm thinking back, I had to learn to become very independent in the wake of my husband's death, because we were very interrelated. Our lives were very connected, every aspect of our lives. So I was then faced to create a new relationship with myself without being the wife as the primary sense of who I am. So now that I've become very independent in the past 7 years, it's now my ability to be interdependent with a man, with a relationship, has been affected by the quality of the independence I've created and nurtured in these 7 years. So probably the woman I am today versus the woman who left her home on a Sunday morning only to come home at the end of the day and her husband was dead. I'm not the same woman. I've had to go, like the phoenix rising from the ashes, I've been burned and reburned and ascended, or whatever you want to call it, into being a very independent woman who expects a man to have a lot of wisdom, maturity, sensitivity, who also longs to be interdependent with a strong woman. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. And do you think that that kind of man is readily available in the world that we have today, where online dating is really the primary way we are meeting people?
It's not been easy.
Yeah.
I have met wonderful men. I will say, even with the story that I told, it was all learning experience, all learning experiences. Each of those men that I've dated the past 4 years have contributed to me.
And I love that you've become friends with a number of them. So you've, even though you're not dating them, you're still in touch, and they're constantly, you know, once in a while, how are you doing, Kathleen? And yeah, which is really awesome in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. So I have great hopes that here in southern deserts, high deserts of Arizona, I will meet a new man of my life. And for a few years, or perhaps for the rest of my life, I don't know.
Yeah, we have just a few minutes left, but tell me, what would you say to a woman who's just starting to, either coming out of a long relationship or has, like you, lost her husband or partner suddenly? What advice would you have for someone like that?
Take it slow. Work on yourself first. Don't rush into anything. And you've got, I would suggest waiting a good 3 years before even considering dating. You're basically dating yourself in the wake of the loss.
I think that's amazing. Yeah. Also, I would say seek support and help from friends and professional relationship, you know, people that can give you the help and the guidance that you need getting through it. I know I was in therapy for a number of years after my marriage fell apart, and it was essential for me in terms of, again, coming to that place of knowing who I am, what my needs are, what my wants are, and being able to express that, right? It's like,
yes,
you got to be able to know who you are and then also be able to say what it is you want. So
that's correct.
Well, Kathleen Berry, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank
this has you. Been really fun to talk, and I just wish you the best of luck in all things coming up for you.
Thank you so much, Marcia. Appreciate it.
Welcome. You're welcome.